You're listening to the Bethel Community Church Podcast. Our podcast normally showcases our weekly sermons here in Chicago at 7601 West Foster. Now, podcasts are great, but they do not replace the care and community you receive from the local church or from your local pastor. So we encourage you to come, join our community, or contact us to help you find a community in your area. We pray the Lord speaks to you as you listen. Enjoy.
Have you ever bought or received an item that said on it, some assembly required? Maybe a piece of furniture, or maybe a toy or a small appliance. You probably found yourself saying, some assembly required. This probably should say, all assembly required. When I was a child and I would get toys that would say that on them, I'm not talking about Legos, that really is all assembly required. I'm talking like, the G.I. Joe vehicles or something the little boys liked to get when I was younger. And I get it. And it would say some assembly required on it. And that very moment my heart sank because I thought, either I'm going to have to put this together and probably get help doing it, or somebody else will before I'm going to get the chance to enjoy it. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's ever been like that. But life is often like that. God is sovereign over all of life, and he, according to his infinite wisdom and his perfect goodness, has designed life so that he doesn't just give you everything in your life all put together. Instead, your life requires some wisdom. You've got to learn skills. You've got to learn to live God's way in God's world. The Bible doesn't always address every single matter that we are going to face in this life. For instance, in marriage, the Bible gives us principles, but you have to learn to live wisely in marriage or in parenting. Probably every parent, the moment you pick up your child for the first time, your first thought is, where is the instruction manual that comes with this little one? There's some wisdom that's required there. In Ecclesiastes 9, verse 13 through chapter 10, verse 20, which is a longer passage in the book, the writer of Ecclesiastes shows us our need for wisdom, and yet in his characteristic realism, acknowledges to us just how limited wisdom is, as he's done throughout the book. Our main idea, as we're going to walk through this passage in just a moment, is that though wisdom is not always valued in this life, live wisely. Because a little folly can cause great ruin. So though wisdom is not always valued in this life, live wisely because a little folly can cause great ruin. And we'll see as we walk through this passage, he never mentions God here. He doesn't even mention his favorite Hebrew word, hebel, which is often translated vanity. In fact, this whole passage feels different than most of the rest of the book. It's more like the book of Proverbs, like traditional wisdom literature. I think the reason for that is because he wants us to value wisdom, to learn to live wisely, because there are only two ways that you can live in life. You can either live wisely or foolishly. And he's been calling us throughout the book to enjoy life as God gives it to us. But if you live foolishly, you will not and cannot enjoy life. So as Christians, we need to live wisely. Even as the rest of the world around us plunges headlong over the cliff into insanity, we need to be people who live wisely. As Ephesians 5, verses 15 and 16 commands, look carefully then how you walk. Not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time because the days are evil. And Jesus, in Matthew 10, verse 16, tells us we're going to be mistreated as Christians for following him. And so he says, behold, I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves. And he famously says there, so be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. In a world of AI chatbots and of sexual revolutionaries and every sin and vice being at your fingertips, and the Bible doesn't directly address every single matter, some wisdom is required. And so in chapter 9, verse 13 through chapter 10, verse 4, and you see I'm going over the chapter break, there's a reason for that. Though the Bible is inspired, Ecclesiastes is inspired, the chapters and the verses came much later. They are not inspired, and so sometimes they're helpful, sometimes they get it wrong. And that's this case here. And so in chapter 9, verse 13 through chapter 10, verse 4, he gives us two truths, one about wisdom and one about folly. The first truth is that wisdom is not always highly valued. Look with me at chapter 9, verse 13. He says, I have also seen this example of wisdom under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it and besieged it, building great siege works against it. But there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. Now notice the contrast that he makes here. This city is little, with few men to be soldiers to defend it. And the king who comes up against this city is great. He's mighty. He has great weapons of war. And the point is, this city stands no chance. But by God's providence, there's a poor man in the city. And by his wisdom, somehow he delivers the city from this king. And so far, this sounds like usual proverbial wisdom, commending how wisdom is better than strength, including military might. And that's true. But notice there's a twist at the end of verse 15. Yet no one remembered that poor man. In spite of all that he did, in spite of the fact that he saved their lives, his wisdom wasn't rewarded. His wisdom wasn't highly valued. How unfair is that? And yet how realistic is the book of Ecclesiastes here? Because doesn't that often happen? People do wise things, help others, and there's little reward for it so often. It's not value. In this life, your wisdom may not get what it deserves. We live in a world that values more than wisdom, social status and wealth and power, military might, far more than wisdom. In fact, some people out there are famous for being famous. I mean, think of the Paris Hiltons and the Kim Kardashians of the world. Think of many of the influencers. They haven't really given wise advice. They're just influential because a lot of people happen to watch their video. I think of sports players. I think of LeBron James. He's great at basketball. Some years ago, he made some political comments or about something I remember. And I thought, hey, LeBron, you're great at basketball, but why is anybody going to listen to you on this subject? You're not an expert. And yet people will, because he's famous. So we might be tempted to think, okay, should I seek money then? Should I seek prestige? Should I seek power instead of wisdom? Well, notice his conclusion, verse 16. Yet I say that wisdom is better than might. Though the poor man's wisdom is despised and his words not heard. Even if wisdom isn't valued, it's still better than anything else that you're going to have, whether it be power or prestige or status or money. Even if you don't have as much influence as others, wisdom is better. That's what we see going on into verses 17 through chapter 10, verse 4, where he comes to the second truth. It's that a little folly can cause great ruin. He says, the words of the wise heard in quiet are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Dead flies make the perfumer's ointment, literally the perfumer's oil, give off a stench. So a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. Now the shouting here is much like the loud voices of the influencers today. A lot of people are listening to them, and yet they're really just receiving their folly. It's much better to be quietly influential among the wise than it is to have a loud voice among those who are foolish. Now, word here, verse 17, that's translated ruler among fools is the same word in chapter 10, verse 4 for ruler. And it's only used twice in this passage. This is how we know that this is meant to be read together as a unit. You see, wisdom is better. It's better than being influential. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, any kind of thing like strength or fame that this world has to offer. And yet, he says, it just takes one sinner to do a world of harm. So just as one fly would make the perfume so that you wouldn't want to spray yourself with it, or think, you know, in terms of if you have a fly in your big bowl of soup at the restaurant, you're going to send it back, right? Even though there's much soup, still just that one fly ruins it, doesn't it? So a little folly, just a little foolishness, outweighs, undoes great wisdom and honor. You know, it can take a lifetime to earn respect, to have a good reputation for being wise or for being a man or a woman of integrity. But just one lie can ruin your integrity in an instant. Just one rash word, one hasty decision, one momentary lapse of judgment in which you give in to a pleasure, and your character is undone. I mean, think of how many politicians out there. I mean, Eric Swalwell now. One guy who's was seemingly on the up and up, his political future completely ruined because he lived for pleasure. How many pastors does that happen to? How many companies, how many organizations, they cut corners trying to save a few pennies, or they hire the wrong people? And what ends up happening? They lose customers and they will never come back. The same way with your Christian witness, brothers and sisters. In just a moment, you can destroy it all with your neighbors or family because of how you live, because you choose to live like the world. This is why the Apostle Paul warns his protege Timothy and pastors, and by extension all Christians, in 1 Timothy 4:16, Timothy, keep a close watch on yourself, on your life, and on the teaching. Persist in this, for by so doing, you will save both yourself and your hearers. A little folly, just a wee little bit, can cause great ruin. So how do you know folly? Well, it shows itself. It shows itself in people's lives. Verses 2 and 3, he says, a wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. Even when the fool walks on the road, he lacks sense, literally he lacks heart, and he says to everyone that he is a fool. Now let me be as clear as I possibly can. When it says here right and left, this is not talking about modern politics. Don't read that into the text. That's not it at all. No, in ancient times, your right hand was your hand of strength and skill. Your left hand was your weak hand. So what it's saying is that fools go contrary to wisdom. Though wise people would choose to go toward their strengths, toward what is good and right, fools just go toward what is wicked. They go toward what is harmful. And yet they're responsible for it because they're choosing to go against the way that God made the world. And so a fool ends up showing everybody that he's a fool. As Proverbs 13:16 says, every prudent man acts with knowledge, but a fool flaunts his folly. It's like he's showing it off for everybody to see. So don't act like a fool, even in little ways. And he gives an example then in verse 4. He says, if the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your place, for calmness will lay great offenses to rest. Now, we don't know why the ruler is angry. It may be saying, hey, you did something foolish, or he just thinks you did something foolish. But either way, it's saying, you know, if your boss is mad at you, that doesn't mean that you should leave your job. If you do, he's going to assume that you're guilty. There's suspicion by you acting in that way. And so he says instead, no, don't leave your place. Don't resign. Don't try to escape. Rather, as the old British World War II slogan went, keep calm and carry on. Pause and ask God to help you to remain calm in your responses and seek to be a peacemaker. If your boss starts yelling at you, don't yell back. Proverbs 15:1 says, a soft answer turns away wrath, turns away anger, but harsh words stirs up anger. If you respond in anger, likely that's what you're going to get back. It's only going to make matters worse. So that means whether you're dealing with your principal at school, or whether you are dealing with your boss at work, or if you're dealing with the police, remain calm, respond gently. Because if you act foolishly, that will only make matters worse. And in fact, it can make them worse very quickly. And so wisdom may be undervalued. It may not be rewarded. A little folly can cause great ruin. So seek to live wisely. As Proverbs 3:18 says, wisdom is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called blessed. Be wise. Pray. Make Psalm 90, verse 12, your prayer if you're saying, I lack wisdom. Say, God, teach us to number our days. Teach me to number my days, that I may get a heart of wisdom. So wisdom's not always valued. Little folly can cause great ruin. So he then goes on to give us four cases of folly where it may seem it's a little folly, but it ends up causing great ruin. The first in chapter 10, verses 5 through 7, is folly in governing. It says, verse 5, there is an evil that I have seen under the sun, as it were, an error proceeding from the ruler. And that's a different word for ruler than in verse 4. Folly is said in many high places, and the rich sit in a low place. I've seen slaves on horses and princes walking on the ground like slaves. Now the ruler here could be a president, could be a governor, a mayor, a boss, a church elder. That doesn't make a difference. The point is that the ruler here, the one who has some authority, makes an error. He appoints somebody to a position that person shouldn't be in. He says he's seen this evil, and I'm sure that all of us can agree. We have seen this done many times and in many ways. There are qualified people, as we see here. That's what he means by the rich and by the princes. There are those who have had the training, those who have been prepared for positions of authority, but instead, he says, a foolish person or a slave, and in those days, a slave would not have had the training necessary, and yet, this ruler decides to put such a person in a place of authority. Probably seen this in companies, maybe some nepotism. Somebody gets put into a position that they shouldn't. What happens even in churches? Churches will nominate people or affirm them to serve in roles that they just aren't qualified for. That's why Paul goes to great lengths in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1 to say what it means to be qualified to be elders and deacons. That's why in 1 Timothy 5, verse 22, we read, "Do not be hasty in the laying on of hands, nor take part in the sins of others. Keep yourself pure. The sins of some people are conspicuous, going before them to judgment, but the sins of others appear later. So also good works are conspicuous, and even those that are not cannot remain hidden." Wisdom appoints those who are qualified. Yes, we want to give grace. Nobody's perfect. But we want to make sure to be a church that functions wisely, because a little folly can end up causing all sorts of ruin. The next case that he gives is folly in work in verses 8 through 11. He writes, "He who digs a pit will fall into it, and a serpent will bite him who breaks through a wall. He who quarries stones is hurt by them, and he who splits logs is endangered by them. If the iron is blunt, one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength. But wisdom helps one to succeed. If the serpent bites before it's charmed, there is no advantage to the charmer." Your folly can be dangerous, even in everyday life situations, such as at work. When he says that this will happen, he's saying this may happen if you're careless. And I can tell you, just from this past Friday, it can happen easily. I'm putting a tarp over some stuff at our house, and I have a stone that I'm going to put on the tarp, and my little pinky, last year I hurt this pinky, this year it's this pinky, gets stuck between this rock and some sort of metal object, and all of a sudden there's this sharp pain, and I pull back and hear my fingers spurting out blood because I wasn't careful. I didn't use wisdom at that moment. As he says, if you're carelessly digging a pit, you may fall into it. In a hot desert climate where snakes are trying to find somewhere that's cool, a poisonous snake would go into a wall that you've built out of rock, and that snake's going to be resting there during the heat of the day. And if you're not careful and you're breaking down that wall, you may get bitten by a poisonous snake, he says. As you're quarrying stones, if you're not careful, a stone may roll back and break your leg. If you're cutting wood, certainly the wood could hurt you, or the saw or the axe could hurt you. You have to be careful and use wisdom, he says. I remember when I was young, my aunt's ex-husband was out taking down some brush on our property. And he's got a weed eater, and he's out there. And they used to have, rather than those little lines that they have now, they used to have metal blades. Well, apparently he didn't tighten it well enough. It shot off, went right through his leg. He had to go to the hospital and get all sewn up. Why? He didn't take the time to make sure that it was ready. Not only can you be hurt if you don't use wisdom, it can make life harder, as he says. You've got to sharpen an axe to have success. Or if you're a snake charmer, I'm sure that we've got a few of those in here. You don't use the wisdom and the skill that you have quickly, You can get bitten by the snake. As he says, though, in verse 10, wisdom helps one to succeed. Wisdom can keep you from injury or an untimely death, can help you to succeed, whether it be in school or in work. So the question is, are you living wisely? Brothers and sisters, are you learning to live wisely from God's word? If you're not reading the Bible, I would encourage you this next month, take the book of Proverbs. Read through the book of Proverbs and consider how the wisdom that's imparted there. Take one chapter a day and just say, okay, how does this apply to my life? How does this apply to my marriage or to my family? How does this apply to relationships? How does this apply in work? How does this apply in ministry? How does this apply to my speech? That's where he goes next in verses 12 through 15. And you'll find that the book of Proverbs has a whole lot to say about speech. Proverbs 18:2 says, a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. Proverbs 29:11 says, a fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back. Proverbs 10:19 says, when words are many, transgression is not lacking. But whoever restrains his lips is prudent. But this brings us to his third case here, folly in speech. Verse 12 through 15, he says, the words of a wise man's mouth win him favor, but the lips of a fool consume him. In other words, they only bring harm. Verse 13, the beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness. It only goes down from there. The end of his talk is evil madness. A fool multiplies words, though no one knows what is to be, and who can tell him what will be after him? In other words, he speaks to things he has no understanding about. Verse 15, the toil of a fool wearies him, for he does not know the way to the city. I think what that is saying here is that a fool is so stupid that he can't even tell you simple things anybody should know, such as how do you get back to the city that you live in? He can't even give those sorts of directions. Obviously, this is hyperbole. But the point is, all that you're going to hear from a fool is foolishness. Now, certainly this could apply to all sorts of areas in our lives. But I want to take a moment and just think about how this applies to social media, how we interact online with others. So take, for instance, if you go on any news source, they've got the little comment section under those articles. Let me encourage you not to read them. You will find that they are full of all sorts of foolishness. People speaking to things that they have no understanding about and giving you all sorts of conspiracy theories and everything with it. Or you go on X or Facebook, and you know, people often on these sites, they can almost speak to things anonymously. They're not held responsible, and so they just say whatever they want to say, even if it's complete nonsense, or they'll bully others on there. What does Proverbs 29:11 say? It encourages us not to vent our anger online. A fool gives full vent to his spirit. These are fools commenting. Don't join them. Instead, restrain what you have to say. That's wisdom. Fools speak to things that they don't understand. They don't even want to understand. They just want to air their opinions. I mean, think of the war in Iran. Are any of you in the CIA or any sort of military intelligence that you just happen to know all that's going on there? I'm not. So I'm not going to make comments online about the war in Iran because I don't even know what to say. Or you think of all that's said about immigration. Think of all that's said in these days online where people are airing their opinions about things they don't know much about. Brothers and sisters, don't join in it. All it will do is make you appear foolish. If you increase your words, Proverbs 10:19 says, transgression will not be lacking. And certainly ask yourself, before you post anything online, what would Jesus think about my comments? James 3, verses 5 and 6 tells us, the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. The tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. A little foolish speech can cause all sorts of ruin, certainly in a nation, but even in your own life. So be wise in what you say. As Proverbs 17:28 says, even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he's deemed intelligent. Sometimes it's better to just be quiet. That's where he goes in verses 16 through 20. With the fourth case where he talks about folly in responding. Verse 16, he says, woe to you, O land, when your king is a child and your princes feast in the morning. Happy are you, O land, when your king is the son of the nobility and your princes feast at the proper time for strength and not for drunkenness. Through sloth, the roof sinks in. Through indolence, that is laziness, the house leaks. Bread is made for laughter. Wine gladdens the heart. Money answers everything. Even in your thoughts, do not curse the king, nor in your bedroom curse the rich, for a bird of the air will carry your voice, or some winged creature tell the matter. You ever said something to somebody, or maybe to a group of people that you hope that somebody didn't hear? I know nobody's done this, right? None of us ever gossip. We certainly shouldn't, but we've all done it. I remember somebody at a former church once texted me something that was meant for somebody else, complaining all about me and how bad I am. Well, thankfully later he realized that I didn't even address it because I'm like, all right, we'll just let him figure this out on his own. Thankfully he didn't apologize for it. But you got to be careful what you say. That's what verse 20 is getting at. Even your thoughts in your bedroom, because if you're thinking something, it's possible that it's going to come out. And isn't that how gossip ends up working? You put your foot in your mouth about something and then it ends up going everywhere. This is especially true, as he's saying in verses 16 and 17, if you have a bad government, bad leaders. It's easy if your leaders are immature and self-seeking to just tear them down in your speech. It's certainly a blessing, as he says. The word there for happy is the same word that's used in Psalm 1 where he says, blessed or happy is the man who delights in the law of the Lord. It's easy to speak poorly of bad leaders, especially with the results, which is, I believe, what we see in verses 18 and 19. Bad government is like a house that somebody's too lazy to care for. Eventually, the nation collapses on itself like a bad house. And if a nation is ruled by those who are only looking out for their own interests, who are just all about feasting and getting drunk, and who are all about getting paid off, I mean, certainly you'll end up, elections are bought, you'll end up with justice goes to the highest bidder. In those circumstances, it's easy to complain and grumble. And I thank God in America, we still have the freedom to be able to speak against our government and things that they do. We have freedom to be able to critique them. Yet as Christians, that doesn't mean that we should be going off and doing so. We need to do so with respect, even in our critique. But in those days, they didn't have that freedom. If you had an autocratic ruler who was, and you spoke poorly of that ruler, he could make your life miserable really fast, or even end your life. So he says, just don't do it. It's foolish to respond to that situation by speaking poorly about your rulers. It's a momentary act of folly that could lead to lasting ruin. Instead, as Christians, as we know from 1 Peter 2:17, we're to honor our rulers in how we speak of them. 1 Timothy 2:1 through 3 even goes further. It says, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, thanksgivings be made for all people, for kings and those in high positions, that we may lead a peaceful and quiet life, godly and dignified in every way. This is good and it's pleasing in the sight of God, our Savior. So though wisdom is not always valued in this life, we need to live wisely because a little folly can cause great ruin. Now, why is it, though, that we're so prone to folly? Why is it that we so quickly do things that we know we shouldn't? Maybe that's you. Maybe you've acted in a way that has brought ruin and destruction to your life and the lives of others. Where does folly come from? Jesus tells us in Matthew 12, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Folly comes from within us. The good person out of his good treasure brings forth good. The evil person out of his evil treasure brings forth evil. I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word that they speak. For by your words you'll be justified, and by your words you'll be condemned. We've all spoken and acted foolishly, and that's why we so desperately need the Savior, who went to the cross for our sins so that we might be forgiven, but also so that the Spirit of God might come into us and transform us so that we might have good things within that we can bring out. So Jesus calls you to put your trust in him, to build your life on his word and the wisdom he can only give. He says at the end of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 7, everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain fell and the floods came and the wind blew against that house, but it did not fall because it was founded on the rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rains came, and the floods, and the wind blew against that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. Have you built your house on the rock of Jesus Christ and his word? Or are you heading for ruin?